Welcome to class this morning, and greetings as well in Jesus' name, the one we have been hearing about, and I also want to express appreciation for what we've heard. The thought that the teacher is always a teacher is just the way it is. There are other people like that too. Your father is always your father too. It doesn't matter where he is, but it's just that way. But we take up the role of teaching, it's that way for us. Well, this is a class on Canadian Parliament, and I might stretch that title a little bit. We might go beyond actual Parliament and talk about government, Canadian government as well, because my chief interest here today is that you can go home with something, that you can take something to your classes about how Canadians govern themselves. And so I'm going to be a little bit loose with this, probably with that intent, so that you may ask questions if you like. And I won't be able to answer them all, but maybe together we can. Because I think it's unfortunate that sometimes, and I was there one day too, the teachers have very little idea of how Canadian government works. And I think that's a little bit unfortunate. Not that we were trying to raise politicians. In fact, it should be quite the opposite. Your students should have no idea which party you favor, or don't. Why would you favor a party? Well, you say because they're more, well, you have to be pretty careful. One time I had a class on Canadian government in the United States. And at the beginning of the class, I had everyone close their eyes and I asked them if they could vote which, and then I asked them which, for whom they would vote. Well, the fact of the matter is, I had my eyes closed too, and I told them that. So I don't know if anyone raised his or her hand, but I hope they didn't. That's the way it should be. We're Christians here this morning, and we're not ashamed of that. That's not what we're talking about, for whom I would vote if I could. No, not that. But we are interested in how it works. I think we can more effectively pray for our government if we know a little bit what's happening. We can, you know, it affects us. It does. Every day it affects us. And of course, there are certain politicians in our minds, possibly, some things that stand out to us, and that's not wrong either. Maybe things we enjoy about how a certain person did things or said things. I think back to the time when the Right Honorable Mulroney was the Prime Minister of Canada. And there are positives and negatives, but he was a politician from the bottom up. He knew how to make things happen and move people, which sometimes worked against him then too. One day he was walking through an airport corridor with a friend, and as they walked side by side down the corridor, they were talking about government things and so on. And he made a statement about something that the opposition was promoting. And he said, if I'd have been them, I'd have done that too. You know, by the end of that day, that was Canada-wide, that the Prime Minister let that slip, but he was on the other side on the issue.
Well, that just helps us to understand a little bit the life they live. You think you're in a glass box some days at school. Well, they are. And so that day he was, well, in the end he had to make a politician's apology for what he said at that moment. But he was a man that wasn't afraid to push himself forward. And he was the one that brought in what? Tell me.
GST, that's right. People probably still hate him for it. But the fact is, he's not in anymore. Probably there have been a few things in the realm of economics in Canada's history that have done so much good for the country. Well, that's just my opinion. You don't have to like it at all. If we maybe don't like it, we have to pay the GST, but the fact is the government needs its money.
You know, sometimes, and as Christians, here's another point. As Christians, I want you to take this home, that we are a grateful people. I don't want to ever hear myself or any of us making negative statements about the government and all these taxes. I saw a picture one time in a newspaper of a loony, and then it broke that thing up into all these things that all our taxes that we have to pay. And I thought, why don't we next week put a loony in the paper and say what all the taxes are doing for us? All the things we should be grateful for. Wouldn't that be fair? And so I think as God's people, we're thankful people. And one way we're thankful is to not grumble about our governments, but rather express that gratefulness. We might think of the Right Honorable Chrétien. I'm not sure how to say his name, Jean Chrétien, but anyhow, you know who I'm talking about. One thing that stood out to me about his time, and he was in office for, now help me out, 11 years, you know? 13? I'm not quite sure. Quite a long span of time he was there, year after year. But one thing that impressed me about him is he was not a Mulroney. He wasn't out there doing everything. In fact, he said one of his slogans was that our job is to rule the country and to rule it every day. That's what he did. And that's how he's remembered. He didn't make a big splash, but he was steady and accomplished good as well. Well, here we go. Running around this circle. Let's ask a few questions here. First of all, the king's heart is where? In the hand of the Lord. That's what the Bible says. That's right. Another question, who painted all the green roofs on the Parliament buildings? Help me out.
Nobody.
Nobody. Because they're made of copper. What happens when copper oxidizes? It turns green. That's all there is to it. It's just oxidized copper. All right. How many ridings are there in Canada or electoral districts? Get it close. Maybe it's the United. Maybe I don't even have it right. It might have changed. How many are there? 308. 338, I think, is the more correct number. That's right. What's that illustration supposed to prove?
Well, more than one thing.
What shape is it?
The Parliament building.
The Parliament building.
That's right. It's interesting.
Now, this pack of pictures that I have, I should give you a little bit of history. When I was, many years ago, when I was a young teacher, I wanted information on Canadian Parliament. So I wrote a business letter to Canadian Parliament, and they sent me what they called a teacher's kit. Excellent material. And I kept that in that cupboard for many years, but today I don't know where it is. I couldn't find it, so I had to get something different. But there's good material out there. You can find good quality material. What I have here, I have a lot of material here. Good, I'll say the pictures themselves, the clarity is not good on the picture, but what they represent is good. If you could get good clarity on those pictures, write a business letter. They probably still have them today. Have something in your classroom that you can pull out, because it's hard to teach government without pictures. What's a mace? What's the Canadian mace look like? Oh, it's this beautiful golden, doesn't mean much at all until you see a picture of it. So make sure you have pictures. What do we mean by the green chamber and the red chamber? What are we talking about? Doesn't mean much either unless you can open the doors and look at them. And if you can't open the doors, you can at least open a picture. Okay, how many of you have been to Parliament Hill? I see your hands. I want to know. Okay, good. We have a good, not all of you. You've been to Parliament Hill. How many have sat in a session on Parliament Hill? A lot less. All right. How many have sat in some government session, provincial or federal? Now we have a lot more. That's very, very meaningful. And once again, you'll be a much better teacher if you can do that someday. Now, I'm not implying here that you go home and teach government all year long. Not at all. But somewhere in your teaching, it should surface. And you should be able to teach some things about it. If you can sit there during that question period, for example, you will never forget some of the things that you learned. I took my students to the Manitoba Legislative Building, Winnipeg, because it was much closer than Toronto. We'd have had a long drive. But we could drive and come home again the same day to Winnipeg. And so we would do that almost every other year. We would take grade 7 and 8 on a school trip. Every year we did. But every other year we'd go further away. And a lot of times it's Winnipeg. And one of the stops was the Legislative Building. It just opens the mind when you sit there and you watch. If you can watch the session start, it's really good too. One year we did that, and the speaker had all the members of parliament stand, and then he prayed, and the prayer was perfect. You'd wonder if they remembered it very long after he was done praying, but the prayer was excellent. And so it was good. It's kind of a mixture, but anyhow, and then they get started, and all the yeas and the nays and the everything that goes on in those oral question periods. But one thing that impressed me as well on that is there always remains there a strong semblance of order, even though it can be pretty disorderly sometimes. But when the speaker speaks, it's amazing how those buildings are designed. He doesn't need any PA system. It just echoes out across there, and they hear him. But order. But one time we were there, it was a little bit worse than. And he stood up and he said, "The speaker is standing." And he said it again, "The speaker is standing." And all at once there was just perfect hush. And then he sat back down and he said, "The honorable member." And did you ever notice that they never are allowed to speak to each other? You think about that. They always say, "Mr. Speaker," they look at the speaker and they talk to him, not. I may never do that, even if I don't like him. I have to talk to the speaker about him. See? And there's a protection there. I won't be quite as apt to, you know, even though you can almost see the fists sometimes. But I think some of that's actually more good humor than we'd like to maybe think. They meet each other later, probably shake hands and go to the coffee shop together maybe. But right then, they're businessmen, and they're working on this thing. And in fact, some of it seems almost to me as though they're hired to disagree, a little bit like a lawyer, right? Isn't that? But you know, there's something about that that makes a government effective. Did you know that a minority government often, if I may say it that way, is more effective than a majority government? Maybe you don't follow what I mean by that. You understand the difference? The majority government has over half the seats in the House. And so they can always shout yay and win. The minority government can't, unless they get some others on their side. But you know, the minority government will tend to move more carefully than a majority government. And so the strength of government, some of the strength of government comes through that resistance from the other side. If I know that you're resisting me, what's that going to make me do? Well, get my act together, right? I have to know what I'm talking about, because I know I'm going to have somebody that's going to say, "Well, what about that? What about that? You never thought about, I better think about it." And so there's strength in that. All right. What's that called? A Venn diagram. Thank you. A Venn diagram is effective in many ways. Keep up with me here. I want you to write what I write, okay? That's what teachers should do that often to their students. Otherwise, the students sit there and wonder what to do with themselves and get into trouble. They should be following the teacher. Okay, so do as I do. Can you see well enough from the back? Is that okay? MPs or House of Commons, you may write, same thing. And senators. Over here, we have monarch again. We have prime minister. And we also have federal departments here. I don't think I'll write that. We would also put federal departments here, but to keep this simple, some of you can take home, we'll try to keep it as simple as we can. Now what the Venn diagram does is helps us see how the two interrelate with each other. So we have these two distinct parts. The legislative branch, the executive branch, we have the parliament, we have the government, but now in the middle, I don't have enough room here, but I'm going to abbreviate things. So I'm just going to write M for monarch. I'm going to write prime minister, PM. I'll just abbreviate there. The prime minister's there, and also the cabinet members. Because if you look carefully, we wrote monarch on each side. The prime minister is here, but he's also here because he's one of these. That is an important concept that your students might not understand. And that is that the prime minister isn't on some big important chair in the House of Commons. It's really ordinary. Looks like all the rest. Now, he does have one place, though. Pardon me. There's one chair that's his with his cabinet behind him. But he's a cabinet member. He's an MP. Oh, by the way, let's make sure we know what that means. MP stands for Member of Parliament, and MPP is Member of Provincial Parliament. And some provinces, like Manitoba, call them MLAs, which is Member of Legislative Assembly. But an MLA is the same as an MPP to us. Okay. The cabinet now is here as a cabinet, but it's also hidden in this one, isn't it? You see how the Venn diagram helps us to see that? So these three in the middle here are represented on both sides. Now, we can talk about that just a little bit more. Well, I should write one more thing here yet, and that is down here we would need to write judicial. I shouldn't write it that way. So there are three distinct branches of government in Canada. They are legislative, executive, and judicial. The root word of legislative is legislate, and execute, and judge. And so the judicial part is just that. It's the courts of Canada, starting with the Supreme Court at the top and coming down to many other courts. And we won't be talking a lot about that. The other two arms of government are the legislative and the executive. just a little bit more on some of those details. The monarch is just that. It's the king or queen of England. But because the monarch is generally not here in Canada, there's someone that's appointed to take his or her place, and that's called the what?
Governor General.
That's right. Don't forget that. The Governor General, in principle, holds the highest place in Canadian government. He sits at the top. He signs every law, though I never heard of him refusing to sign one. So really, in the real world, he maybe doesn't have as much authority as it seems, as what the highest chair should give him. Because I don't think he would ever say, no, I won't sign that law. That's not his privilege. But there's still, it's still effective, because there has to be somebody that finally puts the final stamp of approval. That's the monarch. In Canada, we call it the Governor General. So, monarch here is simply the Governor General. He has other jobs besides that. That's not his only. He reads the speech from the throne when Parliament begins. We might talk more about that if we have time, and so on. So he has other things he has to do as well. We talked a little bit about the MPs, the members of Parliament. We'll get to that a little more. We talked about the election process. The senators. Canada has two houses. Maybe we should go there now. Just a bit. The Prime Minister over here, after a Prime Minister is sworn into office, he then must appoint cabinet members to sit behind him, to bank him. He cannot ever do it all himself, so he'll appoint a Minister of Finance and a Minister of all sorts of things. That's his cabinet.
Now, this pack of papers gets a little bit cumbersome when I need to find my way through it. Oh, what's this picture? I know, you wish you'd have sat further forward. Remember that next class. That's a picture of, can you see it? The Fathers of Confederation. The Right Honorable Sir John A. Macdonald is standing there at number one, but you're kind of far away to see that. And you would recognize this picture too if it were bigger, and that is when the Right Honorable Trudeau signed the, when the Constitution was patriated, brought home to Canada. The Queen is also there, and he's putting his signature onto that document. So the BNA Act eventually was brought home to Canada. What was the date for that? I can't say it. 1982? Okay, thank you. That's when he signed that document, and the Constitution of Canada became Canada's own, we might say. The United States, if we may say it that way, gained their freedom through a war. Maybe we shouldn't say it that way. They gained their independence that way, whereas Canada gained her independence gradually. I'm not sure how to say it. They gradually gained that. And you might say, well, is Canada independent today? I think so. The monarch, even if he or she would want to, wouldn't change much about how Canada governs herself. So, but it happened gradually. This we recognize as the what? Charter of Rights and Freedoms. That's right. That's an important document in Canada. It guarantees freedoms to all Canadians. I had a copy in that other pack that was very sharpened here, and you can read the whole thing. This is very difficult to read, but guarantees of rights and freedoms. And so from that, we have, as Canadians, under God's blessing, the freedom to build a church house and gather there for worship. Your students should hear you say things like that. It's written right there, not quite that language, but it gives us that privilege, freedom of speech. Which you might say, well, that's not always good. but we can at least use it for good. So if the world is saying all kinds of evil things and nobody can get them in trouble for it, we could be saying all kinds of good things and witnessing for the Lord, because it's freedom of speech. Now that, of course, you might say is being challenged today, and it is sometimes, but it's still here. And there still is some fear of God. Or I remember not that many years ago when a man in Parliament, in the House of Commons, made some statement about removing, forget what he wanted to remove. Was it the Lord's Prayer, or was it the prayer from the opening of Parliament? Something that had to do with religion. And he was disciplined for that, as a politician would be disciplined. That was not allowed. And so it impressed me that while we think the government maybe is the way it is, it impressed me that there was still that much fear of God there that said, no, that's not acceptable. That's why we need to pray for our governments. All right, here we come to the what? The Senate. You can tell by its color. Okay, keep writing. You're writing. I should write up here too, but I don't know if I want to take that off right now. Yes, I probably should, because I want to give you this. Here we need to write upper, and here we write lower. And again, if you take your students through this and teach them these things and set it up this way, they can remember the two better because they're across from each other. The Senate is Canada's upper house, and the House of Commons is Canada's lower house. This one is red, very red, and this one is green. Red represents royalty. Green, I forget what, Frédéric. Maybe you know. I'll remember right now. These men in the Senate are chosen for life. The members are chosen for life. And these men are elected. For a session. A parliamentary session. So let's talk about this a little bit now. And maybe I'm talking too fast here. Maybe you know everything I'm saying, but maybe you have questions along the way. Don't be afraid to ask. Speak up. I'll try to give time for that. So let's understand this. There are two main houses down there in Parliament Hill, the Senate and the House of Commons. The Senate is the upper house because it's the final, the bill must pass there before it finally goes to the Governor General to be signed. It's the last thing, that last place it's looked at and scrutinized. It's the upper house. Most bills originate in the House of Commons. Well, I should say most. Many do in the House of Commons, and then move from there to the Senate. There are some bills that originate in the Senate. They start with an S with a number. The others would be C with a number.
And the Senate has certain bills that may introduce and so on. There are rules about that. I don't have that all in my head. But it's Canada's upper house. The House of Commons is the lower. It's where bills often begin. The upper, like we said, is red. You can look at a picture like I showed you, and instantly you know it's the Senate you're looking at, or green in the House of Commons. Now, tell me more about the senators and the MPs. So the senators are appointed for life. Now, the other things about the Senate that we have to understand. The House of Commons has members in Parliament in relation to the population. So in a geographical area, let's say a radius of 100 kilometers here in Southern Ontario, you'd have a whole lot more MPs than what we would in the North, because we just don't have that many people. So you're getting a voice, Canadians are getting a voice in the House of Commons relative to the amount of people that are there. That's the House of Commons. But the Senate balances that, because people in Prince Edward Island, for example, would say, well, we can't do a thing in Parliament. We can't sway anything anywhere because we only have a few people. That's where the Senate balances that. I think I have numbers for that. Prince Edward Island, I was going to say 4, but I'm not sure on that. But the 4 western provinces each have 4 senators. It's all equal. Doesn't matter how many people they have. And the western provinces are not heavily populated at all. In fact, years ago, I know you could have evacuated Greater Toronto with all of its suburbs, and moved Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Alberta into it. Not British Columbia, just 3 provinces, I think. Those 3 provinces could have all fit into Toronto. Can you see why, if you were a Manitobian, you would feel a little bit as though you can't do anything because Toronto's down there shouting and you aren't heard? Well, in the Senate, they are heard because they're more equally represented. They're a unit. They're a geographical unit, not a population unit, you might say, in the Senate.
But you're saying it's still not equal?
It is not equal, no.
I'm still playing with my knowledge of U.S. government above the Canadian government. And there, the senator is 2 per state.
No, it is not that way. I wish I had that. Like I said, this is kind of awkward. I might find it yet as I keep slipping through here, but I might not.
Number 3 comes to mind, but I don't know for sure. Is it 3 from the Atlantic provinces?
From the Atlantic provinces. Well, each province is individual. And I just can't remember exactly how many there are.
But Ontario is also geographically bigger than Saskatchewan and Manitoba. So if we're going to go by geography.
Yeah, and it must not only go by geography, because even there, like if you took Manitoba and Prince Edward Island beside each other, you wouldn't have any in Prince Edward Island. Next to none. And so I don't know what all the rules are that govern that, but I think it does help to make it more equal. That's the point we're trying to make. That the folks in Atlantic Canada, for example, can't say, well, we don't have any say in anything. Because they do. Because in the Senate, it's more equal.
So how do they get appointed?
The senators?
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the beginning of the process is. Oh, there again, I think I read that somewhere. Should have written more things down. See the...
Prime Minister would appoint them.
Is that how it is? The Prime Minister?
But I think, yes. Trudeau just appointed a whole bunch.
Oh, that is right. That is right.
I think he would have an appointment committee. Would recommend them.
Okay, I think that's right. And that's also why the Right Honorable Mulroney, wasn't he in power when there was a bill that was deadlocked between the two houses? That almost never happens. Like, the House of Commons said yes and the Senate said no. And that just about doesn't happen. The Senate might say, you better go back to your drawing board, or I think they do that kind of thing. Like, hammer this out. This doesn't work. But it was simply a lock. And I think it was the GST that he was pushing through, and the House said yes, and the Senate said no, and the bill sits there with no remedy. And he went, the Right Honorable Moroney, I said he was a politician, he found a dusty old law somewhere that Canada has a law that the Prime Minister may appoint, I think, up to 9 more senators. Guess what he did? He appointed 9 senators that would all shout yay. Fascinating history. All right, these senators. I get a little excited about this, probably. I think it's a good thing. There's another thing about the senators in the fact that they're appointed for life. What does that do? Stability, absolutely. If a church leader only served for 4 years, then you never knew who was going to be the next one and tumble all around. I mean, of course, we know as the church leaders age and so on, we have younger ones and the work moves on. But there's something about that, it's the same, year after year after year. That brings stability. Or your father, if you like that illustration better. I mean, you just get to know him after 4 years and it'd be someone else. Devastating. Well, you might say, well, why don't we do it in the lower house? We'll talk about that later, if we remember. But that thing of being appointed for life gives tremendous stability to Canadian government. In fact, you look at a picture, these pictures aren't clear enough, but you get pictures of the House of Commons and the Senate and put them beside each other, and one thing will be starkly evident about the men that sit in those two houses. What is it?
Age.
I don't know how old the man is. That's right. By the color of his hair, you can just see it, all the white hair in the Senate. And authority needs some white hair. Now, you don't have white hair, yeah, I know, but but you're not 8 anymore either, you see. There's some age to you.
What are those 3 S words? The Senate gives what?
Serious.
Second.
Sure, they're all S's.
What's the other one?
I want to say thought.
No. Solemn. I don't know how to spell it. Like this, I think. Don't forget that. That's what the Senate does. It gives serious, second, solemn thought to the workings of Canadian government. You gonna remember that? Lorraine, you know?
I have my pens.
Oh no, I have lots of pens. Here. It gives serious, second, solemn thought to the workings of Canadian government.
And whenever I look at a picture of the Senate, I just can't help but enjoy that. All the white hair there in that room. Yes.
So how is it possible then if the Senate is geographically based and so on, there's presumably a limited number that the acting Prime Minister can appoint more at his discretion, up to 9, as you mentioned earlier. How is this possible?
From where does he get them in?
Right, or how can he add to the fleet if there's a quota province?
No. There are, okay. I believe there are quite a few more. I shouldn't say that. How much? I wish I had those numbers in front of me right now of what that would add up to. Here, what's this say? The number of seats in the Senate is now 105. Here are the numbers in front of my face.
So British Columbia has 6, Alberta has 6, Saskatchewan 6, Manitoba 6, Ontario 24, Quebec 24, New Brunswick 10, Nova Scotia 10, Prince Edward Island 4, Newfoundland and Labrador 6, Yukon 1, Northwest Territories 1, and Nunavut 1, and that's 100.
That's one thing that, like I said, it's a dusty old law that he resurrected from somewhere. If that would happen every other year, it wouldn't work.
Another thing that happens is that senators sometimes resign.
That's right. Or they die.
And Trudeau just filled like nine is the number I didn't know, but he just filled a whole bunch of spots. They were unfilled.
Oh, I see.
And so Brown's is getting really squeaky because we're supposed to have six senators, but our prime minister.
Why aren't they filled?
Why doesn't somebody do it?
I don't know. You'd think that they would get busy and fill them if they're vacant, but.
So I'm understanding right that there can't be more than 105, or can there be greater ability?
Well, if there would be more than that, they'd have to decide which province they're going to be working for, I think. And so then it is kind of limited to that. It says here that in 1867, the Senate started with 72 members, but this increased as the country's population and geography grew. A senator must be at least 30 years old and must retire. So I guess you couldn't be. No, I don't want to be. And must retire by his or her 75th birthday. Who's 75 here this morning at least?
You must have left all the old people at home.
They're retired.
I hope not. I always like to see age in the work of the church. I love to see age there. We need young too, youth too, don't get me wrong, but both working together, that's what we need. I need to go.
What about partisanship? Like, do they have to be kind of nonpartisan to be a senator, or can they be like on a certain party side? How did they work that out? Like, if the Prime Minister goes and puts in a whole bunch of new
right.
senators for Ontario, if he's liberal, he's going to put all the liberal-leaning ones in there, right?
Somebody answer that. I don't know about that, the party thing at the Senate.
It was always my party. They would elect conservative or liberal. Now, Justin Trudeau did the popular thing, or supposed to be popular, of stripping all the senators of a label, of a party label,
right.
And they're all considered independent. Does that mean they vote independently? I doubt it.
Well, we're all kind of biased a bit.
But he's very proud of the fact that there are no liberal senators in the Senate. They are independent.
Well, that's the way it should be, right? If the Senate is going to do its work, it really should be unbiased. That's its job. Is not to stick up for a party, but to think about Canadians in general and what would be good for them. So I can see there being value now. Well, let's talk a little bit about the other side now. So these men are chosen for life. Those men are elected for a session of Parliament, which is often 4 years, not always the same. And they're elected from the ridings of Canada. And this is something your students don't understand. They see all these signs around election time. It doesn't make any sense to them. And they might ask you questions about it. Do you know how it works? Well enough to explain it to them. Okay, you first three here. Come up front. Need you up here. Take that. Stand over here and face, hold your paper up so we can see what's going on here. So, we have Liberal, New Democrat Party, NDP, and Progressive Conservative. I just picked those three. There are more. We can have a block up there yet, too, for Quebec, so on. Okay, I just picked those three. And so, let's say you're all from the same electoral district here in Southern Ontario, wherever you're from, there are districts, or ridings we call them, all over Canada. Units of people for which there is one seat in Parliament, not more. Only one seat in Parliament for each district. But we have all these men now, could be more yet, but we have these three men all from the same district that are running for that one seat in Parliament. They're not all going to get there. Only one's going to get there. That's what it's all about. And so when people from their riding cast their vote, his or her vote, They will cast it for either this man or this party, or this man or this party, or this man or this party. Now you're going to ask me, how do they know? Are they voting for a man or a party? You may sit down again. Are they voting for a man or a party? I don't think that can be answered. It's a combination. Some people will vote for the man, might be his neighbor, really thinks he'd make a good politician. Some people might vote for the party because they think that party is going to go a long ways. It might be more strongly for the party because most people aren't a neighbor to the man that's running. But sometimes the man can greatly influence that. Generally, they're probably voting for what they think is the push of the party, what that party is going to push for. Okay, so after election is over, the ballots are cast and counted, then it'll be either this man or this man or this man that goes to that chair on Parliament Hill in the House of Commons. What happens to the other two?
Go back to normal life.
They go back to work.
Sure.
That's important to understand. And that's where a lot of students don't, they see all these names and think they're all politicians, they're all going to end up in Ottawa. It's not that way. One of the three in this district will go to Ottawa. The rest go back to work. And the other thing that students often don't understand is that they're ordinary men that are sitting, pardon me, ordinary men are sitting in those chairs in Parliament Hill. And when they realize that, what's the value of that? Why do we want ordinary men down there?
To represent ordinary men.
To represent ordinary men back home, that's right. And that's the difference in the two houses. So this house, these are just general Canadian citizens, your neighbor down the road, the whoever he is, the mayor of the town, he's going to run. He's down there trying to work for the causes of this little part of Canada. But this man over here looks at the bigger picture. So it's a very different perspective that they have. They cross. A Venn diagram would bring them together too, but it's very different. Here's a my paper's mixed up a little bit here. Here's a picture. This is again not a clear picture, but a picture of a house of commons. Now one thing I didn't do with the Senate, I still should. That runs away on us. But in the House of Commons, if I walk in the door of the House of Commons and the Speaker's seat is at that end, Mr. Speaker, then the government always will sit on this side, which is the Speaker's right. Okay? The government is always to the Speaker's right and the opposition on the other side. So partway back on this side is a certain chair for the Prime Minister and his cabinet sits behind him. A certain chair back here on this side is for the leader of opposition. He sits there. The two men sit opposite each other. And of course, his party's behind him. Then we have the other parties here and there throughout the house, often sitting somewhat together, but not necessarily. At the far end, if I'm standing here again, that is the Speaker's chair. Behind him, not behind him, beside him are pages. Young people that got a good grade in school and were chosen to run errands here and there for these office men. At a table, about three quarters of the way down, the far end of the table sits the clerk of the house. And on that table rests the mace. Each province has a mace, and Canada has a mace. Without the mace, there's no power in the government. Be there in time to watch it come in sometime. White gloves over the head, over the shoulder. Sergeant at arms, and he faces different directions. I don't know what his complete ceremony means. And very carefully lays it down on the table. The authority has arrived. The power to govern. Oh, you say they can. That's right. That's the way it is. And someday have a school devotional. The scepter in the Bible is just like that mace. And when Esther came with her request,
And the king held out that scepter, and she rose and touched it. There are beautiful pictures there. You know who the scepter is for us? Say it.
Jesus.
And the king is God. And when we come to God, there's but one rule, and that is to put him to death. That's what we're worthy of. But God said, here, I'll hold out Jesus. And then we stand up and touch it. He could put it right down on the floor, but he doesn't. We have to get off the floor, and we have to touch it. And then liberty is ours. That's beautiful. We're not preaching to our students like we heard, but we're just unveiling truth. It's lovely. Make sure you talk about Canadian, the mace. That's what we're talking about here. Well, we could talk about how laws are made. Oh, I want to talk about the House of Commons just a bit yet, because in the House of Commons, no, I did talk about that, the Senate, it's much the same. The Red Chamber is much the same, except there are three chairs at the far end. There are two chairs back and one chair in the middle for this little bit. That's the Speaker's chair that he uses. But whenever the monarch is there, whether it's the king or queen from England, and his or her companion, there are two chairs there for the king's wife or the governor general's wife, or whoever the case may be, there are two chairs there, then they move the speaker's chair away for those times, and that's where he would be. The governor general, far back, and we have a speaker's chair. Much of the rest is set up. And the clerk again at the table, but there's also the usher of the black rod. He's also there to the right side. Well, it's left of the speaker. The speaker's there. He's standing over there. That's the usher of the black rod. That's a fascinating part of Canadian government. I have to read a story at lunchtime. Well, maybe I could now too. What else were you really wishing to talk about? Put that paper. Here it is. I know we haven't. There's a lot more that we could cover. I hope you can remember a few things. It's time to open a session of Parliament. It's time for a speech from the throne. We can't open Parliament without a speech from the throne. So on the first day that Parliament meets after a general election, the members gather in the House of Commons and mill about, making it look like a confused gathering. And those of us that have been at some of those places can picture that well. It's amazing how grown men can act very childish sometimes, if they will. They are awaiting the usher of the black rod, who conveys a message requesting their attendance in the Senate chamber. When the usher of the black rod nears the door of the House of Commons, members of the House slam the door shut. A custom that survives from the days when the Commons of England feared royal displeasure and barred their doors against hostile incursions. Black Rod, he's called Black Rod sometimes, and he does bear a black rod. There's history there too. Raps three times on the door of the House and is admitted by the sergeant at arms. Inside the House of Commons, he bows to the assembled members, advances to the table of the House, and delivers his attendance request in both official languages. The members then proceed to the Senate chamber, led by the usher of the black rod, the sergeant at arms, and the House clerks. So they go down to the Senate, which isn't very far away. They're instructed to return and choose their speaker before the governor general declares the cause of summoning Parliament. I enjoy all these. They wouldn't have to go to all that trouble. They knew what they were going to have to do in the House of Commons, but they don't know. So they follow the black rod down there, and then they get told to go back home and get things taken care of back there. Choose their speaker. Back in their own chamber, the MPs elect their speaker using secret ballots. The House clerk presides at this meeting, after which they adjourn until the afternoon or until the next day. At an appointed hour, the newly elected Speaker of the House of Commons takes the chair, and again the members mill about, awaiting the second arrival of the usher of the black rod. At the appointed time, the Governor General arrives on Parliament Hill in a horse-drawn carriage, weather permitting. There he inspects a guard of honor before entering the Senate chamber, following the usher of the black rod. The Governor General takes his seat on the throne
in the Senate chamber with his wife in the seat beside him. Remember, that's the two far back chairs if we're standing at the doors. With the Governor General and all the senators present in the Senate chamber, the usher of the black rod proceeds again to the House of Commons. Again, the door is closed and he knocks three times. After being admitted, he approaches the speaker, bowing three times, and then announces to the House, to the members of that House, that their attendance is required in the Senate chamber to hear the Governor General declare the cause of summoning Parliament. For the second time, the members proceed to the Senate in a procession led by the usher of the black rod, followed by the sergeant at arms, this time bearing the mace of the House of Commons, the Speaker of the House of Commons, and the clerks. All these people are following. When the members of the House of Commons arrive, they are not permitted onto the floor of the Senate chamber, but must stand at the bar at the entrance to the chamber. That's important, too. There's sovereignty there. They're your neighbor. He's not allowed anywhere close to the throne in that chamber. The Prime Minister is the only person from the House of Commons permitted to sit in the Senate chamber, where a place is reserved for him or her next to the Governor General. And I'm not exactly sure where that is there. I wouldn't picture it being up on one of those two chairs at all. Senators, Supreme Court judges, and members of the Privy Council are also usually in attendance at an opening of Parliament. At the bar of the Senate, the Speaker of the House of Commons mounts a low platform, removes his tricorn hat, and addresses the Governor General, who is seated on the throne. He informs the Governor General that he has been elected Speaker, and on behalf of the House of Commons lays claim to their undoubted rights and privileges, chief among which is the privilege of freedom of speech. The Speaker of the Senate, relying on behalf of the Governor General, confirms the constitutional privileges of the Commons. This ancient ceremony serves as a reminder that the freedoms of today were not easily won. Following this part of the ceremony, the Governor General opens the session with a traditional speech from the throne. This speech, prepared by the Prime Minister's office, outlines the policies and legislation that the government intends to introduce for that session. After that's all done, the members of the House return to their chamber. If the monarch happens to be present, the monarch performs the speech from the throne ceremony instead of the Governor General. Well, so much for the black rod. But I'm always intrigued by those little fascinating details of things that happen there that comes straight to us from old practices in England and how they used to do things there. It's 11 o'clock. We better be good. We're not politicians. We better be punctual. Lord bless you. You're dismissed.